Hey, everybody. Hey, monkeys. Welcome to Snark Monkey number 52. The comedy cavalcade continues, and this time it is Ian Bagg. Super funny guy and super Canadian as well. We have a great conversation. By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at The Snark Monkey. Please like our Facebook page. Just search Snark Monkey, and you will get updates on all sorts of cool stuff there. Our website is snarkmonkey.net. If you like these conversations with all these creative people that we talk to, then please subscribe on iTunes. Find us on iHeartRadio.com or on Spreaker.com. This space available for sponsorship. Oh, I'd be good at that. So Ian and I talk about basically his path, his relentless and fearless path from the hinterlands of Canada into the world of comedy. And I'm telling you, this guy really has, he's either just has no common sense, or it is just this driven effort to get to a place where he knows he's going to do what he was born to do, which was go up on stage and tell jokes to drunk people. He's real good at it. And if you haven't seen Ian's stuff, do a quick, what do they call that? The Google? Do a Google search, look on YouTube, or check out his website, which is ianbagg.com. This weekend, Ian will be performing at the Irvine Improv, actually filming some of the shows for his As Yet Untitled special. And as far as I know, As Yet Untitled is not the name of the special. I think they just haven't come up with a name yet. And then he will move on to the Houston Improv sometime next week. Yeah, it looks like Thursday, Friday, something like that. In Houston, you can check out ianbagg.com for wherever he may be near you. If you haven't seen him on Late Night with Conan O'Brien or last year's Last Comic Standing season, which he did not have the best time on, but he made it to the top five, and that's pretty good. Just listen to the conversation. Man, we have a good time. He's super fast, super funny. Did I mention super Canadian? He's just super. I don't know why the effeminate take on that. That just felt right at the moment. I regret it now, but I'm not going to edit it out because you people deserve to hear me unfiltered and unfettered. All right, I'm going to go look up unfettered, and you enjoy Snark Monkey number 52. This is Ian Bagg.
He's really good.
Give me your big Ian bit back.
Hey, everybody, everybody. Hey, everybody, everybody.
All right, that's good. Oh, that's good. Old-timey baseball announcer guy.
Hey, buddy.
Are you a sports fan?
I am a sports fan.
You're wearing your Muhammad Ali tribute shirt.
It's not my tribute shirt. It's my, it is my, what is it? It's my shirt that was on the ground shirt.
It literally was on the ground.
I just brought the dog back from walk, and I was like, I'm late. I grabbed a pair of jeans and a shirt that was on the ground, and walked out the door.
But somehow the universe said, you know, wear the Ali shirt.
They said, you've got to respect the Ali, Muhammad Ali. I have a Cassius Clay shirt. And people get fired up when I wear it. His name was Muhammad Ali, and I was like, I bought it at the Muhammad Ali Museum, so I'm sure he's fine with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why would people get fired up?
Because it's just some people are weird. You know, they've seen the movie.
You think?
His mama called him Clay. I call him Clay.
So somebody actually did see the movie. It took me the longest time watching the memorial for Ali, which was really quite moving, and I thought a lot of the Billy Crystal speech was great and all that stuff. But it took me a second to go, Will Smith, why is Will Smith? Oh, yeah, right. The big biography. Even my wife said, why haven't they made a movie about him yet?
Like, oh, boy, no way.
It really didn't make much cultural impact, did it?
That's very interesting that people say that.
I don't know.
I actually thought Will Smith was dead.
Really?
No, because of the movie.
Oh, because of the memorial service.
I like the guy that went on before Billy Crystal did a better Ollie than Billy Crystal. Did you notice that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, the guy that, I don't know who the guy was, but he went on right before, and his Ollie was just like terrifying.
Well, it's like everybody who knew him had an impression of him at that point.
Yeah.
What kind of sports were you a fan of growing up?
I grew up playing hockey.
In the great white north there.
I played baseball, but the season was 6 weeks. And if it rained, it went down to 5.
Where'd you grow up, Ian?
I grew up in northern British Columbia up near Alaska.
Wow.
So, Terrace, B.C., near Prince Rupert, near Ketchikan, Alaska.
Are you basically required by law to like and root for and play hockey at some point? Or
No. Where I grew up, it was two different types of kids. It was the poor kids that played hockey, and it was the rich kids that skied.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there were resorts around there?
There was a couple resorts, yeah. And when they would go to different towns and go to the resorts, those were the real rich kids. The Onsteins, I called them. They were the richest family. The Onsteins and the Ozzy Tutus were the richest families in town.
These are actual names.
These are actually the Onsteins owned Chrysler. They owned the dealership there.
Yeah.
And they were loaded.
And
and the Ozzy Tutus were a family from Africa, and his dad was the surgeon in town.
Wow. What town is this?
Terrace, British Columbia. Yeah. So, and everybody else, I grew up in the most diverse place ever, honest to God. Like, it shouldn't have been. You would think it would be all white, but it was a lot of families moved there because there was a logging industry there, and they could work in the mills, and they didn't have to have a grasp on English. They could learn English as they went. So it was Portuguese, it was Indian, it was Chinese, it was Indian, Native Indian.
Right.
And a couple of white guys, French, a lot of French from Quebec, a lot of Newfoundland guys, and they can't speak English at all. They're all, you know, so that's...
So interesting. So we can't even come up with a real... kind of stereotypical Canadian upbringing for you because you had such a diverse group of people. How long were you there?
I grew up there from 1 through 18, but my mom was Australian. So we'd go back to Australia every couple years for, say, 2 to 6 months.
So inevitably, where did you end up learning? Because I ask this question sometimes of people, because I grew up in West Texas where obviously there are certain, you know, prejudices and biases and race issues and that sort of thing. But there were so many things that I didn't learn until I moved to L.A. when I went to college. Like, I had never heard the Jewish stereotypes before until I got here.
That's
in
funny.
Liberal-leaning California.
Well, I had heard the Jewish stereotypes, but there was a very few Jewish people in my town. So when I heard the word Jewing, or the term, the phrase, or what a Jewing me down,
right.
I had no idea that had to do with Jewish people.
Oh,
like,
it
made, so when people told me, oh, that's about Jewish people, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. So, yeah. And then, yeah, the weird, it was a religion, that, like, we called the Indian kids Hindus, because they were Hindu.
Right.
So that was a swear word where I grew up, and also the native tribe was the Nishkas, so we'd call people Nishkas. That was a slam. Yeah, and it made no sense at all. Like, it makes no sense
at all.
So
you had your own version of racial slams that nobody else in
nobody else in the world, and it shouldn't hurt anybody. Like, the ones that we use should not hurt. We're calling you what you are.
Yeah.
You're the Nishkas. You're the Hindus.
Now, that's very Canadian right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, calling you a racial slam by calling you the name that you refer to yourself as.
Yeah. Hey, you're a Hindu. Yeah, actually, I am a Hindu.
Okay.
Yeah. Have a good day.
Now, you're a big man. How big a man are you?
I'm 5'2".
No.
I am, no.
I can't.
I am 6'4".
I'm sorry. I'm supposed to yes and. I realize that. I have taken the improv training, but I have to let my listeners
know. You
know
what's funny is it's supposed to be improv, but they train you to do it. None of those dicks have figured it out yet, have they?
So what are you, 6 what? Oh, it takes a drink.
6'4".
All right.
6'4".
So you're a big man.
I'm a big man. In my head, I'm still 12, so I'm only 5'2". Really? But I'm 5'2", and everybody else is 4'4", because I'm 12 and still taller.
Well, what's weird is that I've never seen you live, but I've seen, I don't know that I've ever quite really consciously known how tall of a man you were.
Well, it happens with TV.
It's really strange.
Because I've seen people, I go, oh, I thought he was tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen somebody the other night, and I said, who is that? And they said, oh, that's so-and-so. And I was like, he's only that size?
Right.
I was nervous about him, but if that's him, yeah.
Now, most of the time you meet any sort of major star, and part of the reason they became a huge major star and an actor is because they're overcompensating for something.
Something, yeah.
And
or undercompensating. Yeah. I just want to be a small man that jokes around.
I just want to shop in a normal area.
So give me, besides the diversity, paint a picture of what childhood is life in this childhood was like in this remote outpost.
It was fun. We, it just happened to be in that time, like mid 80s, where there wasn't technology yet, and there was just enough. I grew up on when I was really young. I grew up on one. We had two channels. When we were older, we got three from the States.
Ooh.
So we were when we got the Seattle stations, we were up and at it. I grew up on those. We would see cereal on TV on the American stations that we never heard of, like Lucky Charms and like stuff like that. I remember the one that I wanted so bad was Grape Nuts, because they made it seem like life was going to be amazing with Grape Nuts.
And then that is the least attractive cereal.
Worst. I had no idea. I had no idea. Cheerios were the same thing. They made Cheerios sound like they're going to be magnificent.
Well, what would be
and I'm not talking Honey Nut. I'm talking regular Cheerios.
Straight ahead, bland old Cheerios.
Yeah, nothing.
So what was the go-to cereal when little Ian was being
Weetabix.
Dragged through the super... What?
Weetabix.
I'm sorry?
Weetabix.
One more time?
Weetabix.
Weetabix.
Yeah, Weetabix.
Am I saying it correctly?
Like
Are you saying that with an
wheat.
Accent?
No, I'm not.
Shredded wheat?
We had shredded wheat.
Yeah.
We had, it was kind of like shredded wheat, but you would put water on it, and then it would swell up. So it was.
So that's,
and then you would add milk.
That's your Lucky Charms. That's your Fruit Loops. That's your Cap'n Crunch Weetabix.
Weetabix, but you had still had to add sugar to it.
Well, of course you did.
Yeah,
it sounds terrible.
It was a thing. It was a block of wheat. it was fantastic.
So getting because Canadians talk about this all the time. The influence from the States, obviously huge for anybody who actually had that influence, but you didn't get it until well into your, childhood formative years.
I had heard about America.
You knew it existed.
Well, my grandparents lived in Trail, British Columbia, which was just on the other side of Spokane, Washington. So I would go down and spend the summers with my grandparents, and they would take us down to Spokane a couple times, and we'd go shopping for things. So that's what I'd see about America. And my thing that I thought America was about is that we smuggled clothes back from America.
You thought you were doing something illegal.
Yeah, we did. My grandparents would buy us stuff, but they never wanted to pay any
you never claimed
duty.
Anything. Oh.
So I'd have to wear three pairs of jeans, four shirts, and a jacket on the way home in the middle of summer, just stuffed into a car, not being able to bend. Did you guys buy anything? Nothing. And we'd always have to wear our old shoes down and leave them.
Now, see, that's funny. So you would take those trips, but you would have this tension on the way back that you had
tension.
To deal with.
My grandfather was so mean. He's just like, shut your mouth and don't say that you're wearing anything, and you couldn't breathe. And the third pair of pants were so tight. You're just like,
That's so funny. This brings back memories because when I was little, my grandparents loved the car trip. They didn't necessarily, and which is great because I ended up seeing my grandmother was a history teacher, so every frickin' battlefield, every historical monument.
That's nice.
But I got to see a lot of stuff, and I went through so many states that I don't know that I would have ordinarily seen that much of the United States. But we did a driving trip to Canada one time. We dropped off my sister at Interlochen in Michigan, the music camp, and then we went on up to Sault Ste. Marie to see the locks, which was exciting. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
But I remember the border stops being tension-filled for me, asking, do you have anything to declare? And looking back at me in the back seat, and I'm, nine or something? He goes, where was your birthplace? Brownwood, Texas,
that's
sir!
That's so funny.
And I was freaked out. I had nothing to be afraid of.
Would they ever ask, are these your parents or grandparents? Would they ever ask that question?
No, this must have been back in the 70s when nobody cared. Either nobody was kidnapped or nobody cared. Your kid went missing, it was
One kid a year would go missing, and they'd be like, it happens.
I got three more.
Yeah. It's going to be okay. We don't own a farm. We've got three.
So where did funniness come in? Where were you getting your...
I think the town that I grew up in was very funny.
Yeah?
I think it's very sarcastic, and I think my mom is very sarcastic. My dad is just goofy, so I think I'm the exact split of them. But
what'd your parents do?
My dad was a mechanic. My mom was a nurse. So, yeah.
So no showbiz or entertainment leanings whatsoever?
Not at all. And at my wedding a couple years ago, my mom told the story about how she spent an evening with Wayne Newton. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the look I had on my face. I'm like, he's straight.
Had you heard that story before?
I'd never heard that story before, and I don't know if she'd had a couple drinks or what, but she just started telling the story about that. And I don't even know if it was sexual, but she spent an evening with Wayne Newton. And of course, being a stand-up, all that went through my head is like, and I get stuck with Gary's Auto Repair? Do you know how much Wayne Newton would have helped out my career? Gary's Auto Repair is not helping out at all.
Wow. So. Do you really think Wayne Newton could have helped your career? Or would have just, it might have damaged you?
Probably would have been a little bit lamer.
All right. But what stories?
Oh, what stories?
So then Dad brought home a plane and put it in the backyard so nobody could take it away.
He is one of those guys that you continue to look at and go, Wayne Newton was really, really rich. And you have to try and figure out how did he get that rich.
But he also went broke twice or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. But got it back, obviously.
Yeah, I have no idea.
So as a stand-up comic...
Evil. He's evil.
He's evil.
I'm going to put it out there. He might be evil.
Wayne Newton is evil. Wayne Newton is still alive, I'm assuming, right?
I think so.
All right. We'll have somebody correct us. Don't worry. We'll Google that before the end of this thing.
We'll Google Wendell.
We'll somehow circle back around to Wayne Newton. So if you grew up there in what seems like a very exciting...
If I did. I did.
If you actually did.
Yeah, you call me up. If this town really exists, okay. If you really grew up in this place...
Because I'm not buying any of this you so far.
It's funny because I was doing... years ago, me and Bert Kreischer and I were in Phoenix, and he was telling a story about how he was in... why am I blanking on that? Rolling Stone. He was the party animal. They based Van Wilder, the movie Van Wilder, on him. And he's telling the story, and the guy just keeps looking at him. He's like, really? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, really? And I just somehow click it, and I go, you're thinking Van Hessling. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, Bert was never a vampire.
Yeah.
And he's like, And it was very uncomfortable because it was like, really? This guy's like, Van Hessling's based on you.
So you're a vampire.
You're a vampire. Okay. Rolling Stone does vampires.
No, the question I really wanted to ask was, if you are in fact a stand-up comic and came from this background, then where did the damage come?
The damage?
Yes, because
that town as well. That
really?
Town, yeah, it was the funniest town.
Because you're
town.
All screwed up people.
I would say I do have some problems, but I don't think I have the problems that most comics have.
All right.
Yeah.
Because you've been around them. And you know them.
They're
sick, dark, terrible. Christopher Titus just sat in that chair last week.
I don't feel good at all.
I know. And look, all you have to do is read the first three lines of his bio, and it's like, shit, really? You're working out some stuff.
Yeah, I remember watching his TV show and going, do these people just not go camping once in a while? Like, is everything so bad with these people?
Apparently
I don't know. Comics, I also think, I have a theory that most comics... have Asperger's.
That totally makes sense.
Because they are...
I think they fit the description.
How many guys have come in that can't make eye contact with you?
Most of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, their social awareness is horrible.
regular... Well, that's the thing. Most of them will say that they are, and I hear this all the time, are most comfortable on... And you may feel this way, too, but most comfortable in that time on stage.
It's the safest place in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to really, I mean, there obviously is interaction because you're trying to get, laughter and you're trying to get a response. And every once in a while you have a heckler that you bring to their knees.
Right.
But it's not a one-on-one.
But at the same time with me, I enjoy a conversation with the audience.
No, you work with people a lot. You do a lot of crowd work.
So I don't feel I'm the same. And I feel that my stand-up scares the industry a little bit.
Why?
Because it's not normal.
No, it's definitely not.
And they just don't go, I don't understand. Like, what's his point of view? And my point of view is it was me and my buddies on a hockey bus going to Smithers, 2.5 hour drive on a highway, and there's nothing in between. So if you're looking out, it's trees, 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 trees. So it's us just chirping each other, just having a good time creating, because it's just
that
time.
Where it was born?
But yeah, because it's basically just around the time that Walkmans are just starting. The video games lights. It's a baseball game, and it's lights that light up around. You know what I mean? It's right. not. It's so there's no. There's
yeah, that
no,
gets old really fast.
Really fast, and none of the batteries. Out. None there of the go. Batteries. So I don't know how many times I can tell you that I heard Def Leppard just slow down on a. You know what I mean? So we had to keep ourselves entertained, yeah. and we would. I remember we'd just sit around and just do the cha-chan game, and we'd have to tell stories, and the rest of the one. Guy would do that, and then the rest of the guys would go cha-chan, cha-chan, and they would have to tell these stories about things that happened. So, yeah, I think it came from that.
So storytelling, basically, coming out of that. Yeah.
But it's funny because
keeping people engaged.
Engaged, but my whole thing is not storytelling. I don't really do story. It does end up into a story, but I don't tell a story.
Right.
Like,
but you're also not doing in any way traditional set them up, knock them down kind of punchlines jokes either.
You don't know where my punchlines are. They're going to show up, and I my thing that I enjoy is people say I didn't see that coming.
Right.
So
is that a constructed thing, or was that just always the way your brain, your delivery was? Do you construct jokes with
a
graph and a...
a graph, yeah. It's mostly a map.
Really?
I construct it with a map.
Okay. All right.
Well, which is also part of my show. Part of my show is I've got to get to the end, and I have to hit certain goals on the map.
Right.
And how I get there doesn't matter.
Okay. I hate to get too nuts and bolts about this, but I'm fascinated by it because you guys all work different ways, but you definitely have something constructed that you know beginning, middle, end, maybe, or beginning, end.
It's funny because I don't know. Yeah. Like, I really can't tell you. I've had
nervous
breakdowns. A lot of times I will just go on stage and I will start nowhere near where I thought I was going to start. I'm like, wow, that was my closer. Let's see where we go from here.
Okay.
Yeah. So
all
it's,
right.
it's you know, it's and all
the
about
audience
the audience.
Kind of tells you that?
Yeah, the audience, it's fun. It's just, it's really, it's... It's the people that come out to see stand-up, and a lot more now because I do have a bigger fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It is really, it's just fun. It's not, and my show's not about, I've had some people, you must have been influenced by Don Rickles. And I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not influenced by Don Rickles. I'm influenced by Jonathan Winters.
Okay.
Which means something said, and my mind takes it something completely elsewhere.
And I can totally see that because I don't think you'd never look like you do have a specific response set up. Like you've got, I know if he's going to say I work in an office, I've got this kind of direction I can take it. It looks like you're totally ready to go off on any direction your
it
brain
is
takes.
Going
you.
Anywhere direction. I would say the things that are set up more are when I do have to do a slam. Those are more set up.
When somebody starts to play, get a little too aggressive
with
you?
Because some people you do, and I've got one for women, which is you're very pretty, but talking is not your strong suit. That's my one for women. I'll tell them I'm gonna punch them in the tit. That's my...
The best thing I think about dealing with a heckler, and you can tell me this, is to try and make sure that you get the rest of the crowd on your side as opposed to making everybody feel like, oh, I'm very afraid of him now. Or is it a balance of both?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of... I'm always confused somebody that brings anger to a comedy club.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same... Honestly, I had a talk with a friend a long time ago, and we figured out it's the same guy that'll get angry in a bakery. Like, it doesn't make sense at all.
He's going to be mad about something.
How can you get mad in a bakery?
Yeah.
First, the smell.
Right.
Somebody's using flour and sugar and deep fry to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
What an asshole. What an asshole. You know what I mean? It makes no sense at all. So,
well, there's also the idea of going to a comedy club, and I was wondering if this is just an L.A. thing. I know now it's not. Of going with a group of buddies or, even the dreaded bachelorette party or whatever.
I don't dread those.
And, really? Having a conversation while you guys are doing your thing. It's one thing when it's an artist. There are music clubs. I can't even go see live music in L.A. anymore because it is never about the artist who's playing on stage. It drives me bananas.
But that's our generation right now.
Is
that's
it?
That's the time of life. Go to a concert and try to see through the cell phones.
I know. It starts to get into grumpy old man territory, but it drives
weird.
Me bananas.
I don't know if we're lighters. Did lighters make your grandfather mad because they had to use matches?
Yeah, but they didn't.
You know what I mean? It makes it...
Put your Bix down, damn it!
We'd burn our fingers until we enjoyed that band.
I went through an entire box.
I came up with wood matches. But I, Flint.
It's trying to blowing on dried grass.
Hold on, we'll get this encore.
Jam that a little longer.
I get your grumpy old man, but I don't. I enjoy that people come out, and I understand that they want to have fun. There's usually one in that group that is a little angry and also doesn't understand.
We're talking about the bachelorette party specifically.
Any time there's a group, there's somebody that doesn't understand, and I think it's for every comic. When you have a heckler, I think they don't understand your jokes, and I think I think they're terrified. I think they're absolutely terrified, and they lash out.
Yeah,
It just doesn't make sense. I've had some of the most interesting like heckles ever because of the way I do stand up. When I first started the headline, I had one lady yell out, "You're doing this wrong." Which made me laugh, and then I had and
it's nice to get notes.
I would say 7 out of 10 times that I've been heckled, it's been women. I don't understand why. I had one person yell out, "Oh my goodness!"
That's all right.
Of course, it's my wife.
You got to take it, Ian.
No, I don't. I don't have to take it.
That's your wife. It's very important.
it's very important. She can tell me stuff later. Oh, I forgot to get a dog walker. Great. The other great heckle I had was this lady just said, "You're not taking this serious." And I'm like, "I'm not taking comedy serious." You do realize what you just
Can
said.
Can you listen back
because
to that sentence?
I think they think it's supposed to be set up punch as well.
Right.
Set up punch.
Like you're not staying true to your craft somehow. I don't know.
I think people like there's I think for the most part people like familiar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they like what they are used to seeing.
Right, and also a rhythm.
Right. Yeah, that's true, because, again, you brought it up yourself, but you are one of the things that's great about you is that you are not quite like anybody else that you're going to see doing stand-up.
Right.
And there is a certain expectation of anybody who goes up on that stage, and when you don't meet it, it can be delightful. You just have to fall into the rhythm.
You have to catch
up a little bit with you.
You have to catch up, but realize there's no hate behind it. Absolutely...
No, it's not like you walk out in defiance of the audience like, I dare you to think this is funny. And
right,
then...
yeah, no, it's... No. It's,
no.
I say some things that are stupid, but who doesn't? Like, yeah, I have some theories that probably aren't right.
So how far back does it go with you even trying to do this? Well, I have to ask the usual hack question. First attempt at it.
Doing stand-up?
Yeah.
22.
Which was where?
Vancouver.
All right.
I had been working in a gold mine setting blasting. ANFO, which is basically explosives.
Yeah, were you studying?
I was going to go to school to become a blasting engineer, and with that, I wanted to learn how to implode buildings in cities and be able to take them out. That's what I wanted. I was like, I loved, because I worked at this
gold
mine.
That's what I wanted to do, you said.
That's not what I wanted to do. It was basically my second choice. Okay, if I'm going to become an adult, this is what I'm going
to
do.
If I'm forced to actually work for a living, yeah.
Because it really wasn't working. It really was not working.
How much building imploding was going on in your hometown?
I was gold mining, so I was exploding sides of buildings. But I thought, how great would it be to figure out? Because the guy that I worked with, that was the engineer, was horrible.
Really?
He would always line it up and put too much. We'd have too much dynamite and explosives, and he would sometimes yell out, "Get under the truck," because it was all coming flying at us.
No, that's a terrible thing
to hear. He was horrible at it. He was not good at it at all.
How much gold is coming out of this mine?
Millions. It was not Friday nights on Discovery. I will tell you that. It was all those but one mine. Like it was an industry.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Those have to exist. I just never thought about it before.
They were the kind that are so huge because gold is at a certain price that they are making money, and then all of a sudden gold is not at a certain price and they shut down.
Oh.
And then people sneak in and take the tailings and try to get the gold out of the tailings. Yeah, it's really, it's interesting.
So you're going to school to...
I was signed up to go to UBC. Yeah. I was going to take this. And really, now that I look back at it, I probably wouldn't, because it was all math. Yeah. I'm horrible at math, because I'm a comedian. English is my thing, and any comedian, you go do your taxes, there's going to be a breakdown for sure. You know what I mean? So,
thank God you discovered it before you got too heavy into it.
I just didn't show up. Yeah. I just didn't. I was just like, I want to be a comedian.
So you knew that early on then.
Yeah. I grew up in this town where it was in the middle of nowhere, and entertainment didn't. I'll throw out some names there. You tell me if you've ever heard them. Doug and the Slugs. That was a big day when they came to perform in our town. Honeymoon Suite.
Oh yeah,
people lost. They did a. They did a.
Hold on, Honeymoon Suite. Damn it. There is a song of theirs that I really, really like. I actually played it on the radio.
Songs. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. New Girl Now, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Damn it. All right. Yeah. Second thing we have to.
They
Google.
Were from Niagara Falls, and they were called Honeymoon Suite. But they came to town with Platinum Blonde. And they sold, I would say, maybe 7,000 tickets.
Yeah.
And that was huge.
Yeah.
Because that was three different towns. Like, people drove for miles. Like, I'm talking 2.5 hours to see.
Because the closest big city to you, obviously, was what? Spokane? Was that the closest?
No. The biggest city, I would say, to us was Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
So you had to drive to Prince George, which was eight and a half hours away.
Oh, geez.
Then you would go right at Prince George, drive, and this is how simple the roads were, because there was only one highway, and it was two lanes. You went, took a right, and you drove another 14 hours to Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's the closest?
That was the closest.
Biggest city.
That was the closest, biggest city. So when I was a kid... And when you say to me, what was your biggest city that you figured out you want to be in a city? Sydney, Australia. Because we go to Sydney.
Yeah.
I never went to Vancouver until I was 20.
Yeah.
You know, So
you weren't a stranger to something cosmopolitan because you got to go to Australia a lot.
It was weird because my parents would take me over there. My mom would show me the city and then go, all right, get back on the plane. We're going back to the Indian village. So and I was just like, what? We got to stay here. There's escalators. Like, we didn't have escalators. I remember this is how stupid I was. I got locked in an elevator because I didn't know you had to push a button.
Oh, no.
Because I'd never been in an elevator before. And I stood in there for like, it seemed like 10 minutes, probably like 30 seconds. Oh. But I didn't know what was going on. I may have been 10 years old or something like that.
You were a rube.
I was a hayseed. There's a reason I flip up the brim of my hat, because I am from Green Acres or whatever that town was. You know what I mean? Like, honest to God, I remember seeing an escalator for the first time, and just moving stairs was just blew my head up.
Did the experience of seeing Sydney, though, make you want to be in a bigger place? You weren't intimidated by that? Or, I mean, it helped you not be intimidated.
I think my mom
saying,
the world is yours.
Yeah.
Wherever you want to go, you
really?
Go.
Yeah. You got that kind of support?
Yeah, my mom had traveled the world with my aunt as a travel nurse. That's, you know, they'd been to Europe, they'd been to America, and somehow ran into my dad. My mom may have been a gypsy, I don't know.
She just, there's a lot about your mom apparently you don't know, you keep discovering.
I keep learning. I'm like, oh, great, mom was in a circus. And when you say your pain may have been my mom, because my mom was obviously running from something. So, you know, that may have been my pain.
Yeah, witness protection, except she would go back to Sydney.
Right, exactly.
So.
Yeah. And my uncles were great and out of their minds. And my Papa Lou was amazing. My nan was this pomp English lady living in Australia. And I'm pretty sure her and my mom didn't get along. But they were really interesting to go over there. But my mom just said it, did nothing hold you back. If you want to do something, you try it. And if you fail, you fail.
Was she stereotypically Australian in that she kind of held on to her Australian-ness? Was she?
Oh, yeah. This day, her accent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just attitude. Yeah. I mean, there's
her
just
attitude,
kind of a...
And her attitude and her food eating, the way she eats food. You're just like, what? What? A bean sandwich?
So I could see with the kind of makeup that the town is and with your mom that you have those Jonathan Winters characters already built in. You've got this kind of diverse group of types to pull from immediately.
It was growing up playing hockey and the guys that coached us and the guys that who were on the team and their parents, you know. I remember going to a hockey tournament and Pinder Takar was on the team, and he had always worn. He didn't have a turban yet. He was too young for the turban, so he had the little bun on top that was covered. And he got into a fight, and the bun came out, and the hair went everywhere. And he was just pounding this guy, just beating him up. And we're maybe 14 years old, and he just boom, boom. And he was nicknamed the Wacky Packy after that.
Which, by the way, a great wrestler name, they haven't done that yet.
Yeah, that is a great wrestler. But of course, Pinder's a Hindu. But he embraced the Wacky Packy. He, like, loved it. Yeah. It was one of those towns where I've done an outline for an animated series about it. My biology teacher for grade 10, 11, and 12 was a guy from Trinidad. He was 6'8", and he looked Chinese, and he rode his bike everywhere.
Crazy.
He sounded like Ray Romano. That was the best part about him, because we'd all just sit back and listen to his voice, and he was a pervert. I remember Jennifer Kenny in grade 12 biology saying, "Mr. Chen Wing, I can't find the clitoris," when we were doing something. And his response was, "I'll be right over."
So I want to move off the town, because I could feel like we could talk about this forever. I'm going to wait for the show now. But what was the draw to this place?
Why would people end up there?
Yeah.
The industry. That was the logging industry, mining industry.
You mentioned logging before, logging, mining. But that would draw this diverse group of people to this.
Because
how big was it?
10,000.
Okay.
But which you know, isn't that big, but it is. But it also, to give a first generation a start.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And the money's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, the money lets you build, you know.
Amazing. So. All right. So now you're in Vancouver, and you've the blast mining studies have gone to the wayside.
I haven't gone to an open mic yet, but I'm just like, I'm not going to school. I got a job at a sign shop. Through a friend of mine, they make signs and they ship them all across the country. So I just make crates and send signs. It's just $10 an hour, I think, is what I make, and you know, and just, which at the time was fantastic money. And
what was the comedy scene like in Vancouver?
Not huge, but I still hadn't got there, because now I'm in the city.
Yeah.
Now I'm...
You're experiencing stuff.
Now I'm going a little bit wild.
Did you adjust okay?
No, we went crazy.
Did you?
We went crazy. I ended up, I lived with a bunch of different people at different times. I started living with my buddy that I moved down with, which was Trent. He moved back to Terrace. He just didn't like it. I ended up living with a band in an abandoned, not abandoned, in a house that we rented in this area that was nothing around, because they were going to rebuild it all. We ended up living there for a year and a half. Nobody collected rent for a year and a half. It was bought by a family or a company from Hong Kong.
Did you have running water?
We had everything. It gets great. So we just knock on the door one day. I'm here to pick up rent for a year and a half.
Oh, no.
Right? And we're just like, well, that ain't happening. And they're like, well, I'm here to pick up rent for a year and a half. And also next month, this place is going to be torn down. And we're like, well, we're definitely, so they're going to tear it down. So we have a house trashing party.
Oh, wow.
Because there's nobody around.
Right.
So we're just like throwing things through. And I guess a cop drove by and seen what we're doing. Like, next thing you know, the cops are all over the place. But I live with these guys, and they were great. And I would see them play. And it was something about seeing them, and I just knew I had to do it. And they knew I wanted to become a comedian. So they found a contest at a comedy club, and I went and did it. And it took me probably about 6 months to prepare for it. And I went and did the set, and I had my jokes written on my hand, and they sweated right off.
Oh.
And so I basically had a conversation with the crowd the first time I went on stage.
Could you not get back on track with the jokes that you had planned?
I ended up doing impressions of fish for people with my hands. I was just like, this is a coho. I was just like moving them around, like the fingers, trying to make the different shapes of the mouth. I didn't win, but I didn't lose.
But, and did it discourage you or make you go, no, this
is... It didn't discourage me, but as you called me a rube before, I thought because I lost, I'm done.
That was it.
I'm going home. Okay, we gave that a shot.
Yeah.
I happened to be walking out, and the manager said, you should come back and just do open mics. And I was like, I'm invited back? So I thought, I was like, oh, my God, I'm invited back. So I went back, and I was just like, this is the best. And it was just a chance. If he had not said anything to me, I would have never gone back.
How quickly were you able to start to get in the rhythm of the style that turned into what you do now?
It wasn't the same.
Or were you trying to emulate somebody else at all?
My influences are Jonathan Winter, Sam Kinison, Bill Cosby. I know those three don't fit together. No. But at the time when I started out, Stephen Wright was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I was deadpan like you wouldn't believe, and you know, just didn't move, didn't say anything, one-liners, and then would say something to the crowd. So I slowly it just built into who I am today. But I've always had that conversation with the crowd, and bookers and club owners have always tried to beat it out of me.
Really?
Oh, especially when I was a feature, because guys didn't want to follow it. You know what I mean? Guys were just like, he gets the crowd nuts. Okay, well, I'm not following that. No way am I following that idiot.
Oh, wow. So. There is this weird, that's something I'm starting to just kind of get a feel for, is the etiquette of how do you temper your act to not overshadow the headliner.
It's yeah, but so, you shouldn't. You should, well, I mean, you should go
right?
out there and just do what you do.
Right?
And then the MC's job is to do a couple minutes and make them forget about you.
Yeah, and even things out a little bit.
Right, but a lot of guys, and I learned this a long time ago, a lot of guys will watch what's going on in front of them, get inside their own heads and take themselves out of it. I don't care what's going on. Do whatever you want in front of me.
Right.
I'm not going to be watching. So you do whatever you want. And I'm not going to be anything like you. Do what you want.
Yeah.
I may hate it. I may love it. But I'm not going to find out.
Right, right, right.
So.
How long did it take you to decide, got to go to L.A.?
I ended up in New York.
Yeah.
Big
move.
Yeah, big move. So three years in.
In Vancouver.
Yeah. So I started in...
So you're starting to get in a rhythm. You feel like you have who Ian really is at this point.
Yeah,
As a stand-up.
I go to Toronto, and I get booked, and it's horrible money. I fly out there, I spend all my money on a plane ticket, and now I'm co-middling with a guy for $37.50 for a week, $37.50 per show. On a weekend, and there's like sometimes there's four, sometimes there's five, sometimes there's three.
Yeah.
So I'm struggling just making.
So you're not even paying for the plane ticket.
Not paying for the plane ticket.
Yeah.
But I've also got a plan. There's the Montreal Comedy Festival. I want to go see the Montreal Comedy Festival. A couple of my friends are going to be in it. I want to go see it. Where I crash. I'll figure something out. I've always been that. I'll figure something out when we get there.
Right.
So I get to the Montreal Comedy Festival somehow. Somebody knows me and says, Ian, there's a place called there's a comedy club there, and they go,
right.
Ian should get on. And there's no way I should have got on. Like, it's just, there's just so many people and like names, Dave Attell,
yeah.
Dave Chappelle.
No, every like, big comic practically is
just coming in and doing
yeah.
spots. Just
right.
coming in and doing spots. Just
right.
coming in and doing spots. And then going and doing their, so they put me on, and somebody happens to be, Colleen McGarr happens to be there, who's somehow connected to the Montreal Comedy Festival at the time. I end up getting on an actual show, like for 5 minutes. Some guy from New York that owns a club, Lucian Hold, sees me, and says, if you're ever in New York, I want to put you on stage. Gives me a business card. So I'm like, this is the best ever, right? Meanwhile, I'd started dating a girl back in Vancouver. And this is back before cell phone, so I'm calling her from the payphone, putting coins in, you know. And she's like, you got to come home. I'm like, I got to get this done. And then the festival ends. I hitchhike all the way back to Vancouver.
You hitchhike.
I hitchhike. I end up getting two rides. They get me across.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Not too bad.
So, yeah. So I get there, and she dumps me immediately. And I'm just like, really could have done this on the phone.
That was the reason she needed you to come back.
Wanted to do it face to face, and I'm like, really could have done it on the phone.
That's noble, ma'am, but I would have liked to have gone the other direction.
Yeah, and I'm still a rube. I like hadn't dated anybody in high school. This girl's beautiful. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm over there. I'm just like, this girl likes me. And I'm like, so I hitchhike all the way home because I think,
devastated. Yeah,
devastated.
And that kicked you down for how long?
That was in the summer. I just kind of floated around Vancouver and went home for Christmas. Got a show in Montreal, a paid show. Was making $900 for the weekend. Flew out to Montreal. I said, I'm not going back. I'm going to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the weekend ended, I cashed my money into American, came out with $600, bought myself a train ticket, got on that train and went to New York. No place to stay.
You'll figure it out.
I'll figure it out. Honest to God, I get off the train. And when we're coming into New York, I see all the graffiti. I see all the dirtiness. I'm like, I've made a mistake.
Have you ever been to New York? Okay.
Never. The only place I've been is Spokane.
Right.
So now I'm going to New York, and maybe I'd done one trip to L.A. with a buddy or something like that, drove down or something like that. So we're coming into New York, and I just see this hell, and I'm just like, I've made the biggest mistake
ever.
By
the way, taking the train in is the worst way to see New York.
For the first time, yeah.
Yeah, you're going back through every back alley, every terrible neighborhood, every damaged part of Manhattan.
Yeah, just basically you're seeing everything where Warriors was filmed. So I'm coming in, and it's just, I'm like, well, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are we going to do? And I'm just like, oh, well, if we die, we die. That's all I'm thinking. I'm getting off the train. A piece of paper's on the ground. I pick it up. It's youth hostels, $14 a night.
What?
I have a passport. I can stay at a youth hostel. So I end up living at this at this youth hostel in Chelsea, $14 a night. I go to the payphone. I call Lucian Hold, hang up 6 times because he doesn't answer. I've only got so many coins.
Right.
Can't waste my coins.
On leaving a message.
Yeah. So finally he picks up and he goes, hello, who is this? Who keeps hanging up? and I tell him, he goes, oh, yeah, I remember you. Yeah, I'll put you on. He goes, why do you keep hanging up? And I said, because I've only got so many quarters. He's like, okay. So I go down there and he puts me on stage. I get the check spot. Get my ass handed to me like you wouldn't believe.
Really?
Oh, it's just the shows that were going on in New York this time are all like insane. It's just like.
When is this?
Oh, 95, okay. 96. 96, 95, 96.
So where'd you go up?
At the Comic Strip.
Okay.
So it's Dave Chappelle.
Right.
Dave Attell.
Right.
Ray Romano. Oh, Chris Rock.
Yeah.
These guys used to close all the time named Red Johnny and the Round Guy. And I'm in the check spot following maybe Chappelle, maybe Vitell, you know what I mean? And just...
Did you knew all these names at this point?
I didn't know all these names. Like, I'm just seeing these... Because I'm...
So you're seeing them waiting.
I'm just watching. Like, honest to God, everybody that went on... Like, Gaffigan was going on late night. He wasn't strong enough to going on at this time, right? They would put him on late at night. And it's insane how strong these guys go. Like, and I'm talking... Like, when Red Johnny and the Round Guy would go on, they would end, and the place would go insane. Like, just insane. Like, I'm surprised there wasn't gunshots. That's how crazy. Like, they destroyed, like, nothing I'd seen before. I'm still Canadian humor. 8 minutes to get through the... Get through to the punchline. Like, the setup's just, like, there's so much. I'm just, like, I'm learning. I'm starting at the beginning.
Right.
And Lucian just puts me on these spots, doesn't give up on me, just puts me on these spots.
Really?
$25 cash a night. $25 cash. I'm now $14 for the youth hostel and banking $11.
You're in the black, Ian!
I am in New York, and if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere.
Oh, that's where that song came from.
I have no idea if it's for me or somebody else, but I'm pretty sure it's for me. Anyways... I just keep going, and he just keeps being. And
are you getting any kind of response? Is a New York crowd immediately a different animal to you?
Different animal, like not something I recognize it. No,
no,
no.
Hostile
embrace you if they love you.
Yeah,
turn their shoulders on you and just. I remember one time going on at a place called Boston Comedy Club. And I had to follow Jim Brewer. This is about the same time. And I had a beer in my hand. And as I went on, this black guy said, you're going to die, white boy. And I remember turning the grip on my hand on the beer bottle so I could smash it and stab somebody if I had to. Like, it was like they used to terrify me at times. But it just kept – I suddenly I was like, okay, Okay.
Now, where does this come from? The I'll figure it out guy, the obviously no fear.
I don't know if I'm too dumb for fear or if I know I'm funny. I got to figure it out, but I know
I'm
funny.
Do you feel like you're making progress?
I know I'm making progress.
Every time?
Every time. Like the first time I go on, I get maybe, okay. You know, like to now I'm not on the check spot. Now I'm strong enough. And this is like 3, maybe 4 months that I'm there for. Like, and by the end of it, the story takes a couple different turns. I get on a couple different clubs. Some people like see me, and I'm walking around like a rube again. It's the middle of winter. I'm walking around in my best shorts, and you know.
But you're from Canada,
right? Right. So
you didn't bring a coat with you?
I think I may have had a coat. I just had one bag with me. I remember when I hear Donald Trump talking about undocumented immigrants,
right.
That's how I came to America.
You were the guy.
I'm the guy, except for I don't know why I got it. I remember the guys went through, they wanted to know what I did. I said I was a writer. They went through all my bags, and they seen my books and my writing, and they're like, okay. They let me go through. What they let me go through today? I don't know.
Were they just paying you cash at these clubs?
Yeah.
So yep, you didn't have to worry about like work visas
any
of that?
Nothing.
Eventually you would.
Eventually I would. And that's part of the story. Eventually I would. But I just end up doing this thing. And I'm staying at the youth hostel. And now I'm comfortable in the youth hostel. So I'm showing up with different entourages at the club. One night it's a whole Asian entourage. One night it's a whole German entourage. One night it's a whole
You're giving these poor visitors like, hey, come on out. I'm going to do
comedy
tonight.
And they're like, okay, we'll come with you.
You've got a built-in audience.
So, yeah. So
beautiful.
But the people that were at the club are like, who is this guy? Like, what's going on? Like, we just lead a different group in every night. So, so I keep doing it, and Lucian and me talk, and we become friends. And one night he says, hey, I got a spot. I want you to go on. There's a showcase for Conan O'Brien. He's not coming, but the bookers are coming, and I want you to go on right before it. And he waits, and they come in the room, and he puts me on right before that showcase starts. They come up to me afterwards with him and say, we'd like you to do our show.
Dude. All right, so obviously Lucian here is the champion in your life.
There's a lot of people in my life that I couldn't have done anything without. But Lucian Hold is the reason why I'm in America.
Yeah.
And also there's a guy before, in the 3 years that I'm in Canada, there's a guy named Pat Bullard who's living in America. He's a writer on, I think, Roseanne, and he's getting his own talk show at the time and stuff like that. And he sees me, and he just pulls me aside, and he said, I don't have any advice for you other than if you get a chance to get out of Canada, do it. And you look for that chance. So, and I'm still Canadian. I'm like, I'm never going to America. It's the devil. It's the devil. You know what I mean? So
is that what you guys had been taught?
Taught. Like, if I go to America, I'm getting killed as soon as I get out of the car. That's exactly what America was to me. I was terrified of it. Like,
the cereals didn't win you over? Nothing about that?
No.
All
right. Cereal. The cereal. That's awesome. Did you remember that? But so I've got that in my head. And then Lucian's like, come on down. And I'm like, okay. So, and Lucian ends up at the time kind of managing me without managing me.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees, whatever he sees in me, he sees in me.
Wow.
So, and he's kind of got been friends with Sandler and all these other guys. Like they've kind of, he's put them through he's respected.
Yeah.
He's respected by the business.
Right.
So when they say, you should see this guy, they know there's not an ulterior motive.
Right. No, he finds people that he responds to that may not have developed yet, but sees what can be.
The thing that he's proud of is he's proud of that he's the booker for the comic strip.
Right.
And the owner, one of the owners. I think there was three of them. And they had Eddie Murphy and all that. So, whatever he does. So I'm still that idiot. As soon as they say that to me, I go, I can't. I'm not legal. And they're like, well, we'll help you get work papers.
You're talking about Conan?
Yeah.
So you...
Yeah.
I can't. I'm not legal.
I want to, but I can't. But I'm not legal.
Had that occurred to you before then?
What?
That you might have an issue? Did you try to get any other job?
No.
No?
I wasn't... I was making $25 a show. I was killing.
You had
I was insane. I was... It was... I was like,
you were living in New York in the hostel off $25 a show.
So I was probably doing six nights a week comedy.
All right.
So, and I was probably making better money than I was in Canada.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got you on Conan.
So they help. They will help you out. We get hooked up with a lawyer. We get hooked up with an agent. And the work papers start going through. I get sent back to Canada until the work papers are done.
Mm-hmm.
Work papers are done. I come back and do Conan.
How'd the spot go?
It was great. I wore my best shorts and my best logging shirt and had a great time and was told by a couple managers about how impressed they were that I didn't care and was so ironic with my outfit. And in my head, I'm just like, these are my best clothes. You don't get it. These are my best clothes. I'm not trying to impress anybody. So
look, you know, $25 a show is not going to get you a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah, it's not going to dress you up. And Lucian loves me, but he's not going to buy me like a wardrobe. So I just end up living in New York and doing this. I'm there until 2000 and just about 2001. I think I left like January or something like that. I moved. Because I had hooked up with an agent and I started booking commercials and they're just like, come on out. And I was like, okay. So I started coming out here and I was booking commercials. And then the weather thing, you know what I mean? So, and not everybody gets what I'm talking about, but
right.
I grew up in Canada.
Right.
I'm now living in New York.
Right. And with shorts in the winter.
And the weather here is perfect. Like
right.
all the time.
All the time.
Like, you know how long it took me to go to a matinee movie in Los Angeles? Because I thought I might miss the sun. That might be the day the sun happened. You know,
we do tend to take it for granted at a certain point.
So
I just lived in Houston for 3 years I got my wife pregnant. We moved to Houston in the middle of the summertime, and she never lets me forget that.
Right.
And so when we moved back, we said, let's remember Houston whenever we start to complain at all about the weather here.
I try to explain the guys that are from here about selling tickets, and there's a thing called weather in other countries,
right.
other states where people don't want to go inside because they've been inside for the last 6 months.
Right.
So it's harder to sell tickets now, and they don't understand what you're talking about. They're like, no, there's a reason. So they want to sit on their balcony and just drink beer and just feel the air. So
it hit me once one spring day. I was in New York. It had been cold, 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 snowy, 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 snowy. And the sun came out and I walked by Bryant Park.
Ah.
And, you know, all those like cafe chairs that they had, you know, scattered about. Every single one of them was taken. They had all been dragged out into the middle of the grass. People had taken their lunch hour and said, fuck a sandwich. And they were like, literally, it looked like a cult had gone out and were
big ball of orange. We love you, big ball of orange. Please let us feel you, big ball of orange.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And I was going, what's the big deal? I was like, it's sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I moved here. I was just like, this is perfect. And I probably, I don't know if my New York would have advanced me more or quicker. But I don't think you can beat living in L.A. Like, it's a reason why we pay $800,000 for a $200,000 house. You know what I mean?
Other than the weather, are you cool with L.A.?
I love L.A.
Is it a place to you?
It's my home.
Yeah.
It's definitely my home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I live in Long Beach, but it's definitely, you know, I love it here.
Tell me about the last Comic Standing experience in
it was
a nutshell.
Fun.
Was it all right?
It was that. I had a good time. It was nerve
wracking. You were great on it.
Oh, thanks, man. I was nervous the first day. Like the first day, I went down to my car. How it happened was I had a friend work on it for 4 years, and they kept asking me to do it and I said, no.
Why'd you resist? I mean, you were a working comic.
Working comic.
It wasn't like you were some up-and-comer trying to get a break kind of thing. But
still, even as a working comic, you're still trying to get a break.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I ended up kind of having a come-to-Jesus talk with myself and saying, you got to do this. Just do it. You need a little bit more of a push, and you need to sell some more tickets, and just do it.
Yeah.
But so I said yes to my friend, and they said they would take care of me, and they would make sure nothing bad happened to me, because I was also concerned that they might, because I am sarcastic and I say stupid things, and I didn't want to be the bad guy on the show.
Yeah. You saw the potential for however they...
Yeah.
Whatever scenarios they put you in or however they edited it, you could end up looking like a complete jerk.
Right.
And you're not.
And I didn't want to...
You say.
I say. But really, I am.
I didn't want
my realness to come out. I say, okay. And the morning of that I'm supposed to go do it, I go down to the car, come back to the, go get back into bed. And I just lie there, go down to the car. And I'm late by an hour and 15
What's
minutes.
What's going on?
Because I just, it's mental. I just had a mental block. And I just called, I texted my manager and I said, I don't think I can do it. And he said, you're going to get in the car and you're going to drive there and you're going to do it. And you're going to
Now, what
it.
Was keeping you from doing that?
I don't know. I really don't. I can't explain to you what it was.
Was it? Was there an element of selling out in some way? That it
a
was
little
some,
bit.
It
was
the
a little bit of
competition.
A little bit of sellout, and also who does a contest? Like contests are rigged. We all know they're rigged, and I still feel that it's rigged. You know, but it's just I just didn't want to. And if you asked me, would you ever do America's Got Talent? I would say no.
Yeah,
but. At the end of the day, if my career was stopped, maybe I would. You know what I mean? So so I go there. And, of course, there's 1,000 comics there, and we're all treated like shit.
Yeah.
And
you can say anything you want.
You can say, okay, well, we're treated like shit. They put you in clothes that you don't want to wear, and they pick your clothes out that you don't really want
to wear.
At
that point, it's a casting call, and those are the most demeaning things you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally your material and your acumen at your job barely matters at that point.
Right.
Do we have one of those? Do we have that look? Do we have that sound?
Right. Yeah. So, and in my head, my thing is you just got to get through the first round. It's going to be bad if you don't get through the first round. So I'm a little nervous and I'm just like, just do enough to get through the first round.
Yeah.
So I get through the first round and then I just didn't care.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
that's maybe the secret right there.
Yeah.
after that point,
they've threatened to kick me off every day.
Really?
Every day.
For what?
For the stupidest.
Just because
shit.
You weren't as invested as you should have been.
I'm guessing, but stuff like I have to go to the bathroom. I'm 44 years old. They want somebody to walk me to the bathroom because I'm gonna run on stage and beg Roseanne to put me through. It just didn't make sense. I'm like, just make it easy for me. I just want to go to the washroom.
Well, they obviously it must have had situations, and anybody who watched that show in any of those seasons realized that there were some crazy ass people.
But they've created that.
Of course,
they've created
no, they
that.
Wanted it.
Yeah,
for sure.
So
otherwise, it's just a bunch of funny people going up doing their act.
Right.
If there wasn't some sort of ridiculous drama from you damaged types,
right?
What was the point?
I guess so. I was just there to be on TV. I wasn't there to win. And they would ask me all the time. They'd get so mad at me, and they'd be like, "What will you do if you win?" And I'm just like, "I'm not going to win, but America's going to know more about me."
Right.
And then they, because I'd never have a series, and they'd ask me for a serious answer. I'm like, I'm on a comedy show. There's no way I'm gonna, like, I wouldn't say this, but I'm right. Like, we need a serious answer. How are you gonna get through the next round? And I'd say, lose the most weight.
That's a great answer.
And they would just be like, why won't you take this serious?
Was he back to that?
And I'm just like, you guys are idiots. So. My favorite thing was that Wanda's really never, the producer of the show, has never really been a fan.
Really?
So, and she's a nice lady, whatever, right. But she's not a fan. She treats me really, like, with disdain every time I've ever talked to her.
Did you find any of the judges' feedback meaningful? Did you feel like you learned anything about making your act better?
Actually. They never really gave me any feedback. They never said, they never, you know, they didn't.
Yeah, it was pretty non-committal. It was good.
Yeah.
I think somebody once told you to do more crowd work.
All told me to do more crowd work, which is funny because then the producers would walk up to me and say, you can't do any crowd work.
Right. Because they can't
edit
around
that. I was like, why wouldn't the judges say, don't do it. Like, we know you can't do crowd work, but you do really good crowd work.
Yeah.
So, or something.
But they would leave that judge comment in, and then never show you doing any crowd work.
I'll tell you. There's three things that happened that stand out in my mind. The one part was we had to meet with a mentor, and it turned out to be Wanda. And I'm just like, nice double dip. Anyway, but we sit down and we have a conversation, and then she's like, would you like to do your show for me? And I'm like, here? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, nope. Mm-hmm. She's like, why not? And I'm like, I got it. It's okay. Talk to friends. And I was not getting on stage in front of one person. I don't do stand-up for one person, no matter who it was. And I have friends that did it that are absolutely hysterical, that make probably $200,000 to $300,000 to $400,000 a year already, that did it and sent themselves into a tailspin and couldn't get through to the next round. It was... I know it makes great TV, but they didn't air. They didn't air me saying no, which I thought would have been great TV. Right. So I just didn't. I wasn't doing it. It wasn't whatever. So then the other thing was that they would make us write out our jokes, which is really interesting, because when I first started doing stand up, there was the producer would actually watch your set and know what you're talking about, and mm-hmm. then write out and get it cleared for you. Not because there's nothing worse in a comic than having to write out everything he says. So I had to write it out, and on the final episode, they came to me and said, oh, we lost yours. You have to write it out again. So I wrote it out again, sent it back in, and it was cleared. And when I did it, they said, we didn't clear that. Oh. And it's funny, because I put some jokes in there, because they'd always not clear something. So I did some jokes, put some jokes in there that I knew wouldn't get cleared. I put a joke in about going down on a girl for the first time. And they cleared it.
They cleared it.
And I was just like, somebody doesn't know what I'm talking about. Or somebody
were you
is
using
just
Canadian
setting
euphemisms of some sort?
No, I was using some euphemisms. I'm not going to even say it because I can't say it. So I was using, and I was just, and they were like, after that, at the end of the set, they're just like, you cannot say that stuff. I remember both Keenan and Norm were like, I can't believe you just said it's got a little bit of a kick the first time you go. So there's no way that's getting on TV.
Right.
So I lose, but I knew I wasn't going to win. I knew I was never going to win. I look at who's standing on stage. I'm like, oh, there's a black guy. There's a black woman. There's a white gangly woman. There's the good-looking white kid, and then there's the older guy, you know? I'm just like, this is a TV show right here. Why they wouldn't make this into a TV show? They're just going to give the, you know what I mean? They're going to give the one guy. And the guy that won, I totally respect, and right. I think I had a great time with him on tour. He's such a nice guy. So it was a great time. But the one thing that really...
It was a great time.
I had a great time.
Oh, good.
I did have, like, none of that hurt me, because it doesn't...
Right. You walked in pretty... I mean, one thing about you, just in this conversation, is that you seem fairly sure of yourself. You may have some insecurities, and like you said, you may have some issues.
Everybody does.
But you pretty much feel like you have a sense of self, that you are
not...
You're not looking for a whole lot of validation all the time. The audience is enough, maybe, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's sometimes that security in people throws people off.
I think it does.
And like, you could be interpreted as being, you know, like a wise ass or a jerk or just...
I think I get wise ass a lot. I am a wise ass, but I'm not. I'm never being a jerk, and some people take it as being a jerk, but I'm never. I don't.
You're not malicious.
I definitely am not malicious. I hate hurting people's feelings.
Yeah, I get off your persona.
So, and some people get it as evil. I'm just like, no, just trying to make you laugh. Sorry.
Yeah.
It was a great time, and I'm so glad that I did it. And the other thing is, I had no idea how many people watched that show.
Did that help establish?
Yeah, who knows how long it'll continue on, but it's definitely brought me a new fan base.
That's great.
So, you know, I enjoy that. Yeah, people, they're really nice to me. They always say I got ripped off. So it makes me happy. So, yeah.
So how much of the next part of your life do you feel like can be stand-up? How much of it, you mentioned you were working on a animated idea for your hometown. I mean, what would be next phase for Ian, ideally?
The next phase for me, I'm actually shooting a new special this weekend
right.
in Irvine.
Bray Improv?
Irvine Improv. Saturday night, June 18th, 7 and 9 p.m. I'm filming it there, and we haven't named it yet, but it's more about where I am now as a human and what family life, and I don't have a family, I have a dog, and you know, it's just where I am, you know. Where
have you
I
gotten in infinitely more personal in your comedy? Is that
I think this one's going to be more like I'm yeah. not I'm letting people in a lot more,
because a lot of comics say that when they really kick it into gear is when they kind of you have your style down, you have the template basically that, you know, that you feel a real comfort level, mm-hmm. but it's when you really push to allow some of that real stuff out that you can really kick it into gear.
I think we're, yeah, it's not all about finger banging anymore, you know what I mean?
I'm going to miss the finger banging.
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, wait, you said it's not all about finger banging.
Yeah, it's not all. There's still a little bit, but...
a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm letting people into my world more.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's just... It's not... I would say it's not as much what I see as what I'll let you see now.
Yeah.
Before it was, hey, this is what I see, and now it's... Hey, come take a look. You can see of me. So,
how soon do you think we'll be able to see the special?
I'm hoping within 3 to 6 months.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And then
we're going to do a couple extra bits with it and hopefully have some fun. I want to do, we're supposed to be doing, they have the Ferris wheel there. So I want to play a little game about called How Much You Know About America with somebody that gets in a Ferris wheel with me. So, and then, of course, use all the editing things where it takes them forever to answer a question. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of which, let's get some insight into In Bag right now with some quickie questions for you.
Okay.
All right. favorite movie all time?
Slapshot.
Ooh. Is it going to be all about hockey?
Well, I could have said the other one. Oh, you know what? As I think about it, Uncle Buck.
Really?
Yeah, I mm-hmm. love that movie, and I cry every time he waves goodbye at the end.
Seriously?
And I almost cried thinking about
oh,
it.
When he
waves goodbye, it's pretty funny.
What a
pretty,
little
yeah.
mushy cream
What a little
setter
pansy. Let me look at my phone now. Oh, people called.
Okay, three more questions.
Okay.
If you were pushed up on stage to do karaoke, the go-to song would be?
Oh.
What?
It's the most terrifying thing. Karaoke?
Yeah.
I can't do it.
No, but if you had to.
If I had to?
What are you talking about, the most terrifying
thing? Terrifying.
You go up on stage in front of strangers every single night, practically, and...
Terrifying. I can't do it.
Because you can't sing? You don't want to sing?
No, it scares me. I, like, get terrified. Like, I've
How
sang
is that?
The, maybe three times terrified.
That's not... That's... They're on the same wavelength.
No, nowhere near.
What's the song?
I would say to. If I was either Hurt by Johnny Cash, which is Nine Inch Nails, or Mac the Knife.
Okay, God, don't do Hurt. That's just going to be painful for everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
I skirt myself today.
Who's your hockey team?
Vancouver Canucks, so yeah. I have a second choice because they won't be good.
It'll be a long time.
It's going to be a long time before anything happens there. The Los Angeles Kings are the
You've adopted your...
I've adopted the Los Angeles Kings, but they've also adopted me.
Oh.
So they've been good to me for a while, and the staff comes out and sees the shows. And,
oh, great.
Yeah, so
and it's really, nice that they actually win once in a while.
Yeah, they're really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your accent comes out even stronger when you talk about hockey.
That's so funny.
It's true.
The boys got to get down the ice with a puck.
Final question. Have you ever, or if not, would you be willing to one day work with a monkey?
Uh-huh. I have.
Oh,
I have worked with a monkey twice.
Whoa.
I have done MVP 2,
which
is most valuable primate part two,
because
which
there
is,
were so many unanswered questions from part one.
There was. Mm-hmm. Will he make it to the NHL? He does.
Mm-hmm.
He does. I played on the same team as him. My name was Olaf Chicken Dance. I was a defenseman on my favorite part of making that movie was the director would roll a monkey onto the ice and then yell, "Keep it real."
To the monkey.
To monkey.
Anybody.
That's awesome. To himself. I think it was more to himself. And then I also did MXP, which is the most extreme primate,
right.
About a snowboarding chimpanzee.
Wow.
So the answer is, I would love to do a third movie with a chimpanzee.
All right.
I also did a poster about a chimpanzee that was an investigator for the same company, but they never picked me to be his cohort.
Wow, you have way more monkeys in your life than I would have even
anticipated. So much
that
fun.
Is a standard question for this.
Is that a standard
podcast.
Question?
Yes.
I didn't know if you were being a
it's
dick.
The be- no, it's the no. I'm sorry. I totally forgot you were in those movies.
Anybody else had been able to say yes?
With the least interesting, I did a bit, Jimmy Pardo. Well, I did stuff for the LA Zoo, and yeah, there was a time where there was a monkey nearby. Most people go, I'd love to work with a monkey.
My answer is yes, and it was fun.
And you would continue to.
Oh.
All right, well,
Thank you for having me, buddy.
Sure, man. Ian, this is great. Good luck this weekend, and
If you're bored and feel like driving.
Yeah, Irvine. That's where I feel like going. Thanks, man.
Get a monkey.
Get a monkey!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.